Hello and welcome back to Bootstrap Web. I'm Jordan.
And I am Brian.
What's up, man? Nice to talk with you again.
Yeah, good to be back on. I know we're taking a few weeks off in between episodes, but that's how it goes when we're both busy and it's summertime. And yeah, it's good to be able to pack a little bit more into each episode too.
Yeah, I agree. Nice, man. So where are you at? I'm heading to Europe tomorrow, baby.
Are you really?
Yeah, a week with the dev team.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Our annual trip. We head out to Slovenia where they are. So Ben is already there. I'm jealous.
Sweet. How long are you going to be out there?
Out there for a week. So what we do is we get an Airbnb in Croatia, which is like a 3-hour drive away, in a cool town called Zadar. So it's like on the ocean, but like a cool spot. And we basically just, during the day, we'll wake up. We'll go get some breakfast, go to the beach. At some point every day there, I must have calamari at one point during the day. I think it's totally reasonable. And then we get back to the house. And basically from like 2, 3 p.m. to like 2, 3 a.m., we just hack. We just work. So I have like a strong to-do list of things that I want to do in person when we're all together.
That's awesome. Well, I am going nowhere. I am staying put here in Connecticut. We're finally getting some beach weather around here.
Nice.
And I feel like I'm working my ass off here, but I'm also trying to work a lot less than I usually do. You know, taking off work earlier than usual, doing a lot of half days, days off, staying away from the computer on the weekends, you know.
Good. That's healthy. I haven't done anything like that for a long time.
but those windows of the hours that I am working, I am hustling. I'm just going as fast as I can to ship whatever that I can in the hours that I'm sitting here in the office.
That's good. I feel like I'm pretty inefficient in those hours. And I think the hiring the two new employees also has made me less efficient because I end up talking through things with them a lot. And I really enjoy doing that, but you don't get that much done when you're just talking. You make progress because the whole knowledge transfer is really important. But for the actual to-do list, it's inefficient. And lately what I've been doing is I just look during the day and I say, what actually needs to get done during the day? What can I do tonight? And I just have like a second session planned at night, which is not a good habit.
Oh, but I can't.
That's what's been happening.
I used to in my 20s. I just cannot work at night anymore. Like I have no motivation, no interest in working. And at nighttime is for Netflix and HBO shows and reading,
I mean, I think what happens to me is two things. First, the energy in the company right now is just like on fire. So the growth and along with it, all the stuff that, you know, that comes with it, the support tickets and some of the customers you just kind of love, you know, and you want to get back to them right away and you want to help them. And someone signs up and they have a legit question and it's just more exciting. So it's easier to be motivated on that front. And then the other thing that happens is the guys in Slovenia wake up sometime around 11 o'clock at night for me. And then they get online, we start talking, and I get re-energized and I start doing more stuff with them. And it's not the healthiest thing and it can't go on forever, but it's kind of fun for now.
Yeah, actually on the personal front, I've been the last 3 weeks been getting a lot healthier. My wife and I have been really trying to commit to this kind of like a paleo, I'll say like paleo-ish diet, kind of like bulletproof paleo kind of thing. And that's been huge for me in terms of focus and productivity. That's always the pattern. Like during the months when I'm eating like shit and not exercising,
you don't feel good.
I'm slow and I'm not focused and I'm making stupid decisions. And this month I definitely feel a lot better and more focused and
that's good. You going to the gym?
Not at all.
Okay.
But I am
trying
to do something every day. Like I'm actually making an effort to get out there and hike with the dog at least, you know, 3-4 times a week, you know, around lunchtime. And like, I mean, that's a good little exercise thing. But for me, it's also to break up the day again, like trying to work a little bit less. And I realized like I went about a year through the course of like getting back from the trip and then moving to the new house. That used to be a daily routine, that lunch break walk with the dog that I kind of cut out for the past year. And I didn't realize how important that was to like just clear my head and, you know, frankly, get away from the two girls, like the little kids and the work, and just get outside a little bit and clear the head. And then I feel a little bit more refreshed to get a few more things done in the afternoon and then call it a day.
Yeah. The ideal I found is the combination of the two. It's if I'm going to the gym and I get the diet right for a few days. And it's such a strange thing that happens. Yesterday, I did like a fuck it lunch. I walked past this restaurant a few days ago, and it's got this amazing fried chicken sandwich. So it just lodged itself in my mind, and so yesterday it popped up in my mind. I was like, screw this, I'm going by myself. I'm eating a terrible fried chicken sandwich, and it's gonna feel great. And then I ate it and was like, I just paid $12 to feel terrible for a few hours. that's all I did. And so it's like the exercise leads into wanting to eat healthy, and then eating healthy leads into the more. It's definitely they work together. And lately what I've been doing is not having breakfast. I just have a smoothie. I used to have the smoothie with the breakfast, and now I just cut out the breakfast, and I feel no difference other than like losing weight.
Yeah, and that's kind of like intermittent fasting. I mean, I've been doing bulletproof coffee for breakfast and no food for years on weekdays, and now this month I'm doing it like every day, and that's just been huge.
Yeah, it's good for you, and it helps on the biz front. Speaking of the biz front, what's happening, man?
Let's get into it.
What's going on?
So my updates for today, I'm going to talk a bit about the personal content stuff that I'm doing with the Productize podcast, and starting up some YouTube videos. I'll start off with that, and then later on, I'll talk about this kind of like a automated recorded webinar thing that I'm trying to launch for audience ops as some lead gen there. And then if we have time, I'll talk about some project management, trying to hire and pull myself out of that. That's been one of the more painful things of getting too bogged down in that side of the work. So I'll start off on the content stuff. It's been about 3 weeks or so now that I've been recording new episodes for the Productize podcast. And that was a podcast that I did last year. It was kind of like a season-based thing, and it ended around October of last year. I'm starting that back up again. I don't know if this is going to be like a season two or just ongoing. It stays in the same feed, but it's taking kind of a new direction. It's more of a general interview podcast now. It's not always specifically about Productize services. I'm just interviewing, you know, people I find interesting. I'm trying to do a mix of, you know, folks that I know, entrepreneurs and whatnot, but also people who I get introduced to who I don't know so well. And that's been a little bit challenging for me to interview them without knowing their backstory too much. And I've always just been a really big fan of listening to interviews, especially really good interviewers, you know, like Andrew Warner, Howard Stern, Charlie Rose, like just, I've always just been kind of fascinated with people who are really good at interviewing. I'm trying to make it kind of like a mix of give me the backstory, like your life story. How'd you start out? How'd you get into entrepreneurship? Mixed with, actionable takeaways, especially if they specialize in something or they're doing something really badass and, you know, take us behind the scenes. So that's kind of the focus there. And what I've been doing, to keep it consistent is I just blocked off Tuesday afternoons. So in Calendly, guests can book one of two spots. So I'm always trying to record two episodes every Tuesday afternoon. And I'm only going to publish one episode a week, but by recording two a day, I get way ahead. And that's been working out. So right now I have something like 6 or 7 episodes in the can. They're not edited yet. I'm hiring an editor. Like for this show, we've been using Podcast Motor and they've been awesome. I think for the Productize podcast, I'm going to hire a solo editor, partly to because I don't have as much of a budget for it, but also I'd rather just have like kind of one person to knock through a very specific process for not only editing the audio and publishing the thing, but getting the show notes and like listening in and getting all the links and posting those and scheduling out social media. And like, I'm going to give them a whole process that all I need to do is record the episode, drop it in Dropbox. And then he just, you know, puts the gears in motion. And it was interesting. I mentioned this to my newsletter a couple of weeks back that I'm starting to record these episodes. And a guy replied to me, he's down in Brazil. And I think I'm probably going to reach out to him like today or tomorrow and let him know you know, that he could start editing. Cause what he did was he replied and he was like, you know, I'm trying to get into podcast editing as a service. I don't have a ton of, I don't have a huge portfolio of clients right now, but it's something that I'm trying to get into. And just to show you what I could do, he actually created a video for me, like a 5-minute YouTube video. He's like, and on the video, he's like, Hey, Brian, like, I want to show you what I could do. He grabbed a previous episode from the Productize podcast. And he like showed me on the video, shared his screen, like here's me like removing some background noise and cleaning up some extra spaces. And like, here's some extra music. Like, let me show you how I would do this. And then he gave me like an example of show notes that he would write up. And I was like, boom, this is awesome. Wow,
crafty. So, very nice.
So yeah, it's like, how could I not hire this guy? Yep. And then on kind of a related note, I'm also trying to do more video, which I haven't posted these yet, but again, I'm trying to record 2 videos a week, basically just answering questions. So I've been getting questions from the newsletter, and just taking it like 8 to 10 minutes on each video, just kind of talking through some thoughts or experiences on that question.
And it's just you on camera, just answering it.
Yep. Selfie videos, you know, I'm trying to get more comfortable with that and trying to get more focused to like nail down the answer without rambling and all that. I bought this like fancy like selfie stick because I did a couple videos when I was outside walking with the dog, and I realized after the fact that they were shaky as hell. And I did a couple videos in the car while I was driving my daughter or going to pick up my daughter from daycare.
The car thing is all the rage in the e-commerce world. All about e-commerce in your car, man. And it's very efficient. Like, it's so efficient. It does not look very safe.
I know. You know, like I watched it and like I was totally safe when I was driving and doing this, you know. I'm not saying I'm the slowest driver out there, but like on the video, like I was not driving very fast, but on the video, it looks like you are flying. Like it looks super like way more dangerous than it really is, you know?
Yeah. There are a few guys that do it. It makes sense. It's very efficient. You must have like a red steering wheel and like some custom leather seats in order to do it in the e-commerce world though. You have to, otherwise
you gotta show up.
You're not like taking it seriously. That's actually touches on a topic though I'm going to talk about later.
All right. I mean, I spent way too much time like getting the perfect, like lodging the camera up on the corner of the car so that it doesn't shake and it's the right angle, and then do it at test recording after test recording. And like, spent way too much time on that. But, I'm also looking to hire a video editor, and I threw up a ad on Upwork for that. Again, I'm probably looking like not US based, trying to save a little money on that. Don't want to spend a ton of cash on like a, you know, like a local video editor. But again, the idea is just to get them off my iPhone into Dropbox, and somebody just edits them, adds some music, adds some text and stuff, does the show notes, puts it up on YouTube, publishes it. I have like 6 or 7 of these recorded, and I want to keep that routine up like 2 a week. And I'm hoping to start getting these published out there in the next like 2 or 3 weeks. That's, you know, part of the effort now is to just ramp up the content on the personal side and, you know, drive that email list and get that back up and running. Cause I kind of took off a few months from doing that. So,
all right, you're back. Cool, man. So
over to you.
Let's see. Well, so obviously the big thing is the trip to Slovenia. And it's funny. I'm just looking at – I have a list, right? In Trello, I have a board for the trip, and I have a checklist of things that I want to do or I want us to do together when we're there. And it's kind of funny the difference of the things that are on that list from what I do day to day. So I could just like run through that list. So first is sign up and use a competing product to get the full experience of a competitor product. So I outlined an email sequence, but for like a lead magnet email sequence, but I actually want to create the lead magnet email sequence. And there's something that happens when we're all together where you get like this insane energy, and we can just you just do so much in a 24-hour period, so much more than you normally do, because it almost feels like people are watching you and you want to like impress them. So I feel like I could be like, I'll be back in 2 hours with a fully written email sequence and I will actually do it, because it actually only takes 2 hours. But for some reason, it will take 4 weeks to do here. I have no idea why. So, you know, some lack of discipline or whatever.
I think what do they call it? Like whatever time box you give yourself, that's the amount of time you're going to take on a thing. And I think trips especially, and this has definitely been the case for me, if I'm on a trip, like when I was in the Philippines, I knew there was like five or six things that I wanted to get done during that month while we were there. But also when I have a trip coming up in the calendar and there's that like deadline, like, all right, this weekend I'm getting on a flight, I got to get all this stuff done before Friday. And
yeah,
like it's a good pressure to have.
Yeah. So we try to create that artificially, but it's very hard to do. The way I do it is one of the guys I hired works more closely with me. So Mike is kind of more on the marketing and sales side with me. And so we try to have meetings. It sounds inefficient, but it actually forces us to do stuff. So we will just simply go off to a conference room for 2 hours and do one thing, and we'll make a lot more progress on it than if we just said separately, okay, you do this and I do this and we'll talk at the end of the day. For some weird reason, we just get into a room together and we're not like talking the whole time, but we're consciously working on the same thing.
What's an example of something you worked on like together like that?
I want to say retargeting ad, but that we just did yesterday. I'm trying to think of a different example that he and I worked on. I think it might have been the mapping the email sequence. So we basically, it was the onboarding review. That's what it was. It was let's look at our app and just stick a finger like right here, this is wrong. And right here, that doesn't make sense. And after you click this button, you really should go to the next page. Otherwise, how is anyone supposed to know that they're supposed to go to the funnels page after the setup? So we just kind of looked at a computer screen together for like 2 hours and just wrote notes and created a big Google Doc and then handed that over to Ben and the tech team. So it was like focused work. And then we just had this product, right? We just had this Google Doc that said, if you implement these changes, things will improve in our onboarding. And that makes a big difference in the conversion rate of trial to paid. So we kind of try to do that at least once a day, once every other day. We're like, all right, that 2 hour stretch, that's when we're talking about this email sequence. This 2 hour stretch is where we're going to talk about the lead magnet. And then we create like an ideal week. And then on Friday, so today in a few hours, this afternoon, he and I will grab a beer. Thank you, WeWork, for having a keg for free. We'll grab a beer and we will map out not exactly what's going to happen next week, but what are the priorities and what days are we going to focus on each priority? So it's like if we have like a 2 hour session 5 days a week, what are we going to focus on Monday's session, Tuesday's session, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday? And that way we just kind of approach it as, no, we don't have a million things to do. We just have one big thing to do today. Yeah. So it's been helping, but it's definitely not 100% there, but we're trying.
I've been trying to think the same way, like working solo, and I always try to plan my week like that. And I'm constantly just writing lists after list after list in my personal like journal app thing. And, you know, this week it's focusing on this, this, and this. And today I'm getting one thing done and things get pushed back and distractions happen. And it's like, in your case, it's awesome to have somebody to kind of keep you accountable, because you're kind of both accountable to each other to deliver this stuff. And,
And I told him that when I hired him. I said, so I don't get things done unless I owe them to someone. And so you need to be kind of strong enough to say to the boss, hey, we were supposed to get that done on Wednesday. It's Thursday. What can I do to help? Like, let's get it done. Otherwise it's not going to improve things. All right. Next thing. Okay. I'm going to write a webinar presentation. So I have it in my head. I know the arc and the narrative. But now I need to make the slides. So fortunately, I have some slides from some talks and stuff. So it's just a matter of kind of writing out the script and then doing the slides to match it. So again, it's a few hours, but I feel like that's something I can do from like 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. one night and have fun with it.
I did exactly that last week for this webinar. And I was like, that's something I could do in half a day. It took me all week into the weekend.
It's hard, but at least you've done a few too. It's just a hard thing. It requires extended focus on one thing, and you kind of have to push through.
Yeah,
but I think it's our biggest opportunity for revenue in the short term, so it's worth it.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yep. A public roadmap. Like we might expose our public roadmap so people know what's coming up instead of just like what's just been released.
I did that with Ops Calendar. Doesn't have a ton of activity on it right now, but I made a public Trello board.
You made it public.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
And they have Trello has a voting feature that you could turn on. So all the people, like the people in the beta group, like they could go in there and upvote features in the roadmap.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen that with like user voice. So we're looking at that. The other big thing that we did last year that was really successful is a feature matrix. So Ben basically sits us all down and we put the features that are either on the roadmap or people asked about or we can think of, and we put it on this big matrix of impact on one axis and dev time on the other axis. So it's like you get to see what we think has the highest impact and requires the least amount of dev time. Like that's probably what should be done first. And so we kind of, it just sets everything up. It makes it really clear and objective. Because if you get a request for a feature like two or three times within a 1 or 2 day period, all of a sudden you think in your head that it's a really important feature. But so it affects you. So when we put on this matrix and we like have to objectively say, that's a cool feature, but it is gnarly to actually get done, then it objectively puts it the priority list like into this visual matrix of we really should do that because it's going to have a big impact. Yep, so that's a big one. And then documentation. This has been a big focus. We've built up our documentation maybe from like 10 articles to about 50 articles in the past 2 weeks. And we just still have a bunch to go. And a lot of them rely on me to make videos and screen share videos. So I think that's something that's really, really helpful. It's just like the top five or six biggest things that people have questions about. And then what we plan to do is surface them inside the app. If you look at we end up looking at Bear Metrics a lot. Their product is just well done. The design's well done. It's really impressive. Bear Metrics has this really interesting thing they do next to a feature inside their app. They just have a little button. So right now we have these little tiny question marks that if you hover over, it just gives you a little pop up. And we've kind of wrestled that that's not enough. We're trying to convey too much. It's like two paragraphs. Yeah. When you hover over a question mark, you can't do that.
I've done that in my apps too.
Right. You need to convey what this means and what it is and how to use it. So what Bear Metrics says, they just have this little icon and a little button that just says like learn. And then you click on that and it just opens up the doc. So it's like if we're going to create
still
all this
in doc, the same window, like in a pop-up or?
No. It opens a new window. It's almost like if it's easy to explain, you could use the hover. But if it's complex, then let's use the documentation asset that we created and surface it instead of just saying, well, if they're confused, then they'll just go to documentation. Because the truth is, they don't even know that they're confused. Yeah, like we have these little features that are like allow you to change the price of the upsell without changing it on Shopify. But they just look at that and they're like, what am I supposed to do with that? This is just like a field. But I don't know. I don't understand why that's valuable.
And I feel like there's a difference between instructions, like how does something function? Like how does this functionality work? There's a difference between that and just best practices, you know, and like teaching a methodology. And I'm reworking a bunch of my drip automation workflows, and that's one of those things where it's like, you know, they've got some technical documentation and they do have some like blueprints and stuff. And I'm part of Brennan's like Drip Mastery Facebook group, which is it's a great program that he's putting together, but it's a great community there too. Like people talking about advanced stuff. But I feel like company, like most SaaS apps, there's like, this is how you get it set up and this is how you really get the most out of it. Like those are two separate things, you know, like
yeah, the education piece is, it's tough to get to because you need to do so much work on making sure people know how to use it first. Anyway, that's the list. There's some things on the list that I can't talk about. It's fun to look at what I set aside for myself that for some reason I think I can get done there better than I can get done here. So I hope to report back.
Yeah, it'll be good to hear next episode.
Yes. Let's hold me accountable. Let's do it. So if I come out of it with no webinar and not much documentation done and so forth, and I just talked for a week, that won't be as good.
Yep.
Well, speaking of webinars, that has been, it's been on my to-do list to ship like a week ago, and now it's Friday of the following week and it's still not shipped. But it's close. And, so basically, my goal for this month is to, just put a much bigger effort into driving new leads for Audience Ops. And so last month I talked about how I started some Facebook ads and those are still running today. I think they're looking a little bit promising. Definitely the best cost per click that we've seen is driving ads, like cold ads to a big evergreen article. Not sending them to a landing page, not trying to sell anything, not going to a webinar or anything, like just get them to a free article and then on the article have content upgrades and then do a follow-up sequence from there. That actually worked pretty well last month. It's running this month. I know that it resulted in some leads and actually I think two paying clients from those ads. So that's looking promising. It's profitable. This month I'm trying to put more juice into that. And at first I thought that what I was going to do was write another one of those evergreen articles and just double that up. But instead, maybe I'll do that a little bit later. Instead, I'm going to stick with the same article as like the very top of funnel. But now I'm launching this webinar as like, to help convert more email subscribers into leads or have something to promote with retargeting ads. And so the way that I'm doing, this webinar is called, Sell to Strangers. And I spent some time kind of writing out the content and the script for it in a doc. And then I converted that into slides. And then I recorded it as a recorded webinar. It comes out to something like 23 minutes. It's actually a little bit shorter than I expected that it would be. But I think I packed in some pretty good information. And like the concept of like sell to strangers, I'm trying to target the end goal that someone would have when you're trying to invest into content marketing. Like it's easy enough to build and launch a great product. It's pretty easy to sell it to friends and contacts and warm referrals, your personal network. But if you're ever going to grow your business, you basically have to figure out how to sell it to complete strangers and do that systematically at scale. And the way to do that is to build a content-based sales funnel. You know, we learned about like at MicroConf with like Tofu, Mofu, and Bofu and having those content assets in place. So I kind of do a deep dive into that or like a condensed deep dive into that in this like 20-minute lesson. Making that point that I just said, but then like these are the key content assets that you need to build and establish and where they fit into the mix. And then at the end, of course, it leads into you don't want to spend time on that. You don't want to outsource it and get poor quality. So Audience Ops solves that problem.
Okay. So you talk about the concept and what it can do for you. And then if you've bought into that concept, you can go off and use the information on your own.
Exactly.
Or some people will be interested in having someone do it for them.
Right. And so I haven't launched it yet. I'm hoping to launch it like in the next day or two. Is on the site, we've got a slide up on the footer. Call to action. It's like after you've been on the page for like 15 seconds, you'll see that. And there's also an exit intent pop up. And that's, enter your email address and then instantly go see this video workshop. And then I'm working inside Drip to have some follow-up sequences in place. The idea is to drive more consultation requests and so I have some follow-up emails to help with that. And once I get this launched, I think it'll be good to just drive, because we get a lot of organic traffic coming through and drive them into this sequence and integrate it with our follow-up. But then I'll drive retargeting ads to it and get that into the mix. So that's I'm hoping to get that out the door in the next couple of days.
Nice, Ben. All right, so let's go from there into the next thing I want to talk about. What I have felt lately is I felt like a Boy Scout, man, when it comes to marketing, that I don't make enough claims and I don't want to say need to be sleazier. That's like lazy way to describe it. I need to create more desire. How about that?
Yeah.
Is that right? That's more fair. So even yesterday I did a Q&A on Facebook Live with someone who runs a Shopify group with 5,000 people. Right. So we had about 40 people on the call, and then it gets posted to the group, and then it lives on there, like with a link back to our site and everything. So it's an opportunity to kind of get people interested. And I found myself talking like, you know, a freaking Ivy League, like, don't get your hands dirty, just talk about the features and make no claims. And I was like, man, that's weak. You just look around at the other offers and at the other positioning and all that. I feel like I need to not skip over that piece of it. For a long time, we've relied on just the fact that there's built-in demand for our product, and it's not our doing, it's the market's doing. People know about upsells and they want to do it. And then they look around for a solution and we exist, so we get some of that demand. But because we've been in that position, we forgot that we need to create some demand too. We need to get people interested. We need to make people excited. So we've kind of stepped away from that. And we have the added excuse. I call it an excuse specifically because our pricing is higher. And so we try to come off as more professional. So that kind of excuse combined with the laziness of not needing to do it, I feel like we've gotten our marketing into this weird place where it's super standoffish. It creates no heat. It creates no desire and you want to take action now because it's going to do something for you.
Well, so what are you thinking? Like, what do you want to do more of? How do you want to change it?
So for a long time, we've been waiting until we had impressive numbers. So we've always wanted to be able to say, like, I remember very specifically, ClickFunnels grew off the back of one webinar, and the name of that webinar was Steal My $17,000 a Day Funnel. Okay? So real straightforward, dollar amount per day, eye-popping, like, that is desire. And then the webinar was, let me show you how I make $17,000 a day. Right? Yeah. Everyone watching is like, I want to make $17,000 a day. Right? So it was a good match between the product and the audience, and it did not beat around the bush. It was, here's how I make $17,000 a day. Don't you want to do that too? I'll show you how. And I've always kind of admired that, and I also think that it makes sense for our space. Right? Our market is not the traditional retailers who are kind of slower and more grounded and more professional. Our market is the marketers. And the marketers, this is how they think. They think fast and hard, and that's how they operate. That's how they spend. And that's what they buy. And so we've been waiting a long time until our numbers had that eye-popping effect. And we finally have that. So we have people using our platform that are making kind of eye-popping amounts of money. And so now we can use that as, like, I think what we need to do is lead with one eye-popping case study. So it's not, we don't have the added benefit of, I'm the founder and here's how I make $17,000 a day. I wish I could say that. But we can say, here is a real customer and here's how they make, you know, $17,000 a day. And see how they do it and how you can do it too. So it's real similar, but we need to put that out front.
I need to do the same thing with Audience Ops. We did do a series of case study articles a couple months back, where actually you were one of them, where one of our writers interview, and we do this for clients pretty routinely too, where they connect us with one of their customers, our writers interview them, and then we turn it into like a 1,500 word written case study about the story of like how they had the problem and how they think about the solution and why they chose the solution and the benefits and the results that they've seen. So we did a series of those a while back, but but we have like so many other clients who've been on board with us for like a year, year and a half, 2 years, and they're just like quietly kind of doing their thing. And I need to do the same thing. I'm thinking about like at some point doing a short series of interviews where I'll just interview our clients and kind of dig into some wins and like really like specific actionable about like where they fit content into their marketing funnel and a little bit of the story. And then,
so, you know, yeah. I'm sorry, I'm interjecting cause I want to push back on that. And that sounds a lot like what we've done where we're like, this is what you can accomplish with our service. But what we don't talk about and what I didn't hear in that was, here's the result of our service.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so, and the result can be a happy founder who feels good about what's happening in their company, but you're asking the prospect to make the connection themselves. And I think that's what we kind of shy away from, that other people don't. We don't make the connection. We don't say we are responsible for X amount of money, right? We leave that last part up because we feel icky about it.
Yep. It's yep. true. Yep. I have the same hesitation and, you know, I mean, but it's like, I do look at a lot of those webinars, like the $17,000 a day. And it's like,
doesn't feel right or what?
Look, I know that this is sometimes true and sometimes not true, but like, of course you can make $17,000 a day when you're selling how to get rich products. I'm not saying that ClickFunnels is one of those. You know, like you see a lot of these case studies from marketers and they're selling like weight loss products or they're selling how to make money online. And that does not apply to every business or product or industry. That applies to a really huge market of consumers, you know, and it's not the same when you're selling to businesses or just other industries. And so I totally get it and I respect it, but
it still has to match. It has to match the audience.
It has to match the audience. And like, you kind of have to be up for, I try to be as upfront as I can about like, look, you can apply this in different ways and in different situations. Obviously that muddles the message and that it kind of, I hear what you're saying about that, but I don't know. That's the hesitation that I think most people have.
I sympathize. I have the same situation. I think what's pushing me in that direction is we weren't sure which segment of the market was going to be right for us. If it was going to be what we call a retailer, right? Someone who cares about their brand for the next 10 years. And then the other segment that we call marketer. And marketer is someone who does Facebook arbitrage. That's really all they do. They don't care what products they're selling. They're just trying to match Facebook ad spend to revenue and using physical products as the vehicle, right? It's a completely different thing from I'm building Chubby's shorts and I want it to be this brand that lasts a generation. It's just a different thing. But over the past few, I guess maybe 2 months, it's just solidified. Our segment is the marketers. That's who wants our product much more. Maybe the retailers, they come along, but the heat and the energy is all the marketers. So maybe what I'm doing is projecting onto you, but really what I'm coming to terms with is my audience needs something different than what I'm giving them. Yep. All right, good talk there. Cool. Feel good about that.
I just had one more thing on my list here, and it's just something that's been kind of, I'll say, bugging me, but has at the same time been a little bit productive for the business, and that's the project management side of Audience Ops. Right now, we have two really great project managers on board, and I actually have an ad out to hire a third project manager in the next week or two. Got some really good candidates in there already. I'll be holding interviews in the next couple of weeks, and it's like a part-time, ongoing, long-term position, but the frustration that I've had is that I get pulled into project management questions and issues too often still. And I feel like, I don't know, like it shouldn't happen this as often as it does this late in the, like having been doing this 2.5 years and we've got really solid processes, but project management is a different role than everything else on the team, because it's like, not only do you have to follow the process, but you also have to be like situationally aware and like, you have to be able to just deal with issues so and make them go away or just make in a really smooth way. And also, but it's also about like prevent being proactive and recognizing when there's a potential fire that might start a week from now or 2 weeks from now, and taking the steps today to prevent that. And I've been trying to work with our project managers and also work with our processes to build some of that stuff in. And just right now I'm aside from working on all this marketing stuff and the webinar stuff, I'm also working on reducing the amount of time that I have to get pulled into stuff. And I'm not saying to them like, hey, don't pull me into stuff, just figure it out on your own. Like, I definitely don't want that, because that obviously causes more problems. And we have a very like nailed down system here, and I don't want to keep it that way. And so what I've been working with them on, like, here's some best practices on how to escalate stuff to me, you know? So, when you do escalate something to me, don't just say, here's the quick question. Like, how do I handle this? Give me the backstory. Like, tell me, like, this is a client who, if you remember a week ago, don't make me investigate. Like, give me the link to the relevant Help Scout conversations. Give me the Trello cards. Tell me who's working on what. And a lot of times they just kind of like assume that I remember all those details because I was the original salesperson on that call and I handed them off. But like, I don't remember those details. Like, you have to give me the backstory. That's number one. And then number two, I've been telling them, they most likely have an idea of how they should handle something. They're usually just escalating to like get a confirmation from me. So yes,
it's the decision making.
Yeah. So I'm like, look, suggest your way forward. Like, how do you want to deal with this? Or if you're unsure between option A and option B, just lay those out for me so that I can just reply like, yep, you got it. Go with that. Or yes, do that, but tweak it this way. And that'll make it faster for me to get back to them, faster for them to get back to the client, and just smoother for everybody.
Yeah. You gotta tee it up. Right. Yeah. And ideally the trust increases over time for them to just make the decision on their own. But sometimes if you need to escalate it, don't make me run through everything you just went through. Like, give the background and then like two options. I'm thinking that we should do X. Does that sound right to you?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And a lot of our issues are technical, like WordPress plugins are not working with a client's certain weird host that they're using, or a drip workflow is something different with this client than what we usually do. And so one of our assistants, he's been kind of like the rock star on the team, and he's been really good with technical stuff. So I kind of, I actually did this a while back, but I promoted him and made him kind of the technical lead on the team. So he's in charge of all technical issues. And so I'm still involved in troubleshooting some things like that when they come up, but he's getting better and better at understanding the ins and outs of that and to be able to be the go-to guy instead of me. So
nice. We need the same thing. Like, we have an amazing support person now, but so much of it is technical that it ends up getting escalated anyway. And he's doing a good job in the way he escalates, but it's almost like we need a junior developer to do the technical investigation, right? It doesn't help that much to have Ben, our CTO, doing that much of the investigating of technical issues, because then he just ends up spending a lot of time on that. It just takes a lot of time. You could spend an hour just to figure out why something happened.
Yeah.
Yep, yeah. It's tricky.
Yeah. And like, I actually wrote an article about this a week or two ago about like turning these distractions into opportunities. And it, as distracting as they are, and it's frustrating and it's slowing me down on the marketing stuff that I'm working on, you know, like spending it like an hour, a couple hours a week on these escalated issues. It's also an opportunity to revisit our processes, see where things are breaking down. How can we put the right people in the right places to be able to be self-sufficient and all that. And also, as our project managers are getting filled up with their capacity, I'm getting ready to hire the third person now. So I need to make sure that our training material is bulletproof for that new person. And so I worked on this like training program. And so like turning these distractions into opportunities is something that I've been trying to
Right. So they don't just continuously happen. Yeah.
Like
forever.
don't just deal with
they
it.
They will.
Right. Like the idea is just like, don't just deal with it. You have to deal with it so that you don't have to deal with it again.
Right. Yeah. Fully deal with it.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, that's it for me. I got a call in a few minutes.
Cool.
And then, you know, have a full day and pack and try to enjoy the nice weather here in Portland and all that. So
awesome.
Yeah. I'll look back. I'll look forward to talking again when back from Europe.
Yeah.
In the meantime, thanks everybody for joining us.
Yeah, enjoy the trip.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, late.